This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
If you refuse a subpoena from Congress, can you get away with that? We're about to find out minutes from now. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
Steve Bannon refuses to talk. The January 6th committee brings the hammer, a key vote this hour, to hold him in contempt of Congress. But how soon could he face criminal prosecution? Americans kidnapped in Haiti. A local gang now demanding $17 million to release the missionaries. The White House weighs in on whether to pay up.
We'll be waiting to see if people are going to mix and match.
The FDA poised to allow a mix and match approach to COVID boosters. Plus, what we know about which shot provides the best protection.
If you have a book on the Holocaust, that you have one that has opposing...
How do you oppose the Holocaust?
An administrator pushes teachers to represent opposing views on the Holocaust. Now a community speaks out at a tense school board meeting.
There are not two sides of the Holocaust. The Nazis systematically killed millions of people.
Coaches fired for refusing to get the shot. National parks battling a spike in crowds. And the new key to unlocking the origins of the universe.
Live from CNBC. The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. Tonight, the Congressional Committee investigating the attack on our democracy on January the 6th confronts its biggest challenge yet, trying to punish a witness who refuses to cooperate in the investigation. Coming up in this hour, the committee is set to vote and hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress for defying its subpoena. Mr. Trump's former chief strategist is refusing to turn over evidence or even to testify about his interactions with the then president leading up to the deadly insurrection. Steve Bannon has cited executive privilege. Tonight's vote would start the process of seeking criminal charges against him. And it could send a message to other Trump allies. Earlier this month, Politico reported that Mr. Trump's lawyers told Bannon and three other former Trump aides to ignore the committee's subpoenas. NBC's Leanne Caldwell live on Capitol Hill. Leanne, this all gets underway in less than a half hour.
It sure does, Shepard. And in the next 30 minutes to 60 minutes, this could all be done with as well. We expect the committee to act unanimously to refer a criminal contempt charge to that full House of Representatives, because after it gets out of the committee, it would then go to the full House for a vote where it was also likely to pass. We're told by sources that that vote could happen as early as this week. After that, then the House would then refer that criminal contempt charge to the Department of Justice, where these criminal proceedings could get underway shortly after that. Now, all of this comes as the committee is trying to set an example with Steve Bannon, because it's not just Steve Bannon they're worried about. There's three other top close associates of the former president, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and a former top advisor, Kash Patel, and another top advisor, Dan Scavino, who have not yet gotten this referral for criminal contempt. We are told by committee sources that Meadows and Patel are engaging the committee. That's a level lower than cooperating with the committee. And we're told that Dan Scavino has asked for some more time. So this is a process that is playing out. It's actually playing out rather rapidly as well. Congress usually moves quite slowly, but in Congress speak, this is going very quickly. Another committee source has also told me that I want to point out that while these are the high-profile people, there's a lot of other subpoenas that have been issued, and there's a lot of other data that they are trying to obtain from telecommunications and social media companies. And so this is just one facet of a very broad investigation that the committee is undertaking, Shepard.
Leanne, thank you. And of course, we'll follow the developments from Capitol Hill as the vote begins, coming up in the minutes ahead. Live updates as they happen. A notorious Haitian gang is reportedly demanding $17 million in ransom for the release of a group of American and Canadian missionaries. $1 million per hostage. That's according to the reporting of the Wall Street Journal. It says Haitian police and the FBI are in contact with the kidnappers. Police say the gang abducted the group on Saturday. At the time, they were leaving an orphanage in Port-au-Prince. They say the group of 17 hostages includes five children. NBC's Sam Brock now. Sam, we're learning more about these kids.
We have some late-breaking details, Shep. Good evening. Good to be with you. We spoke today with a pastor and a church member in a community in West Michigan where they say that one family there had seven people going to Haiti, two parents, Shep, and five kids. Of the five kids, only one of them was over the age of 18. And the mom and the five kids were abducted. The husband was not there at the time, so now is standing by and waiting to find out what the fate of his family is going to be. The pastor there also saying that they had taken trips to places like Kenya before, but this was their first time to Haiti. They understood the risks, and they went anyway. As for the $17 million ransom, that does come courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. It's also been supported right now and confirmed by the New York Times, CNN, several other outlets as well. The justice minister in Haiti saying that it could be a matter of weeks before this is resolved. But FBI agents and those with expertise in the agency say there's a number of factors right now that are working against this notorious gang, not the least of which is they're holding 17 people captive, 17 people who need food and water and supplies and medicine. They have to move their location as well to try to throw off authorities. And of course, it's Americans and children. Here is Tim Gallagher, a former special agent in charge, talking about the importance of not making payments in this kind of situation.
Ransom payments are the fuel that drives these criminal organizations. So the FBI is looking to rescue the individuals, rescue these victims, at the same time depriving this criminal organization of the money that's going to embolden them and have them commit, and potentially embolden them to commit more acts like this in the future.
And Shep, I talked to a doctor who works in Port-au-Prince today, and if this does not give you a sense of what they're up against right now, I don't know what would. She says that what's going on right now affects every level of society, from the rich down to the kids who are selling fruit on the side of the street. They, too, are being swept up and kidnapped right now. That is a window into what's going on in Haiti, where there is a power vacuum, no government infrastructure, no police, no military, and gangs running rampant throughout the country. Shep, back to you.
Sam Brock reporting live tonight. Thank you. Americans may soon be able to allow switch vaccines when choosing a COVID booster. Sources tell NBC News that FDA is expected to sign off on, or could sign off on, this mix and match strategy as early as tomorrow. Some doctors and health officials say the move would help simplify the booster rollout and ensure that people who want an extra dose can get one. New data shows mixing and matching vaccines may actually provide more protection, especially for those of us who got J&J's shot. Right now, U.S. regulators are working to expand booster eligibility to millions more Americans. The FDA expected to approve extra doses of Moderna and J&J's vaccine in the coming days. Dr. Kavita Patel now, former White House Health Policy Director during the Obama administration and an NBC News contributor. Dr. Patel, thanks. If the FDA gives the green light, can people assume that mixing and matching is both safe and effective?
Yeah, Shep, good to be with you. And I think the key here is that the FDA made a nod to this in last week's advisory committee with a presentation of the data and a discussion of the data. But obviously, none of the manufacturers are asking for this. So that's why we're waiting for the agency's language. And yes, Shep, to your point, it does appear small trial, about 458 volunteers across all three vaccines with mixing and matching. But it was safe and effective thus far. I think it'll be clear, though, that we don't want to create chaos. So we're going to probably see language that encourages for you to stick to what you got. But that if you could, or if you, after discussion with your doctor, wanted to mix and match and that's appropriate for you, this might be the most relevant for J&J recipients, Shep, then you can do that. What's also confusing is that for J&J recipients, it's 18 and above, everybody that's recommended to have a booster, so far a second dose of J&J. But for Moderna and Pfizer, let me be clear, the boosters are still limited to anybody over the age of 65 and people between 18 and 64 that are high risk or have high risk occupations, law enforcement, doctors, et cetera, pharmacists. So I think that we're still going to see confusion, Shep, no matter what the agency says.
To that seems to be a steady. Let's talk about J&J's vaccine. If you got J&J, it's pretty clear from a lot of these tests that your protection goes way down. But it appears, at least with Pfizer and Moderna booster, you know, it could be much greater. Should a J&J person get something else?
Yeah, I will say this, having seen the mix and match data, it feels really difficult for me as a physician to tell a J&J patient that they should stick with J&J when I know that the mRNA vaccines, Moderna or Pfizer, can raise the neutralizing antibody levels from the original J&J dose upwards, Shep, of 75 times. Wow. Now, how much antibody do we need? Probably not that much. But I think it's clear that it's better than a second dose. So it does bring up for me in practical patient conversations, yes, an mRNA vaccine might suit you better for that second dose. I know that a lot of my patients are already seeking out, though, Shep. A lot of my Pfizer patients are saying, well, I want the Moderna one. We don't see that much of an incremental difference if you have one mRNA to switch to the other. And I would say that incremental difference is not worth switching if it's easy to stick with the same manufacturer. But you're hitting it on the point on J&J recipients.
I got one more thing. I've been watching the numbers really closely in the United Kingdom, and I don't understand it. They're very well vaccinated, yeah, yet their numbers are going up. Should we be looking at this and being concerned about this side of the pond?
Yeah, Shep, this is something I've been watching closely, and I have a little bit of like a pang in my gut because we're watching kind of a sublineage of the Delta strain, something very specific
Delta
that
plus
is growing in percentage. Right, exactly. That is growing in percentage in the UK. And Shep, I think that could explain there's a potential that it's more transmissible than Delta, which makes it easier to be even more infectious than Delta. But I think what's happening at the same time, though, Shep, is this real world experiment where the efficacy of AstraZeneca is decreasing and they haven't rolled out their boosters.
Yeah.
It's an argument for boosters and a pretty compelling one.
And their number of young people with vaccines is pretty low, too. Dr. Patel, always watching. Thanks so much for the guidance.
Thank you.
There's new fallout over vaccine mandates. You may have heard Washington State University just fired its football coach because he refused to get a COVID shot. Coach Nick Rolovich was the state's highest paid employee. Annual salary, more than $3 million. Now he's out. School officials say they also fired 4 assistant coaches. Under the state mandate there, most public employees needed to show proof of vaccination by yesterday. The school's athletic director says Coach Rolovich applied for a religious exemption, but it was denied.
It is disheartening to be here today. Our football team is hurting. Our WSU community is fractured. Today will have a lasting impact on the young men, on our team, and the remaining coaches and staff. Going forward, our priority has been and will continue to be the health and well-being of our 2021 football team.
Associated Press reports Coach Rolovich is the first major college coach to lose a job because of vaccination status. He has yet to comment publicly about being fired, as far as we know. School officials say the team's defensive coordinator will become the acting head coach at WSU. A professional hockey player suspended for using a fake COVID vaccine card. The NHL announcing just yesterday that it's suspending Evander Kane for 21 days with no pay. San Jose Sharks star will lose nearly $1.7 million of his salary for this season. In a statement, the player wrote, "I made a mistake, one I sincerely regret and take responsibility for. During my suspension, I'll continue to participate in counseling to help me make better decisions in the future." Officials for the Sharks say they're extremely disappointed by Kane's disregard for health and safety rules. The NHL was also investigating Kane for accusations of domestic assault, accusations made by his estranged wife. But today, the league announced those claims could not be substantiated. Properties linked to a Russian billionaire swarmed by FBI agents in the U.S. today. Why the feds decided to raid the homes of a powerful oligarch with close ties to Vladimir Putin. Chaos after the runway. A charter plane bursts into flames after a brutal crash in Texas. And dozens of New York City cops facing misconduct charges for actions taken during the Black Lives Matter protests. What they're accused of doing and the punishment awaits those found guilty.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
He's a powerful Russian oligarch with close ties to Vladimir Putin. Today, the FBI raided properties in D.C. and Manhattan linked to the billionaire. His name, Oleg Deripaska. The name may sound familiar because for years now, he's been under U.S. sanctions for Russian interference in the 2016 election. These are images of federal agents swarming a mansion this morning in one of Washington's wealthiest suburbs. And here they are outside a townhouse linked to Deripaska in New York City's Greenwich Village. Deripaska came under scrutiny during special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation for his business dealings with former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. NBC News investigative correspondent Tom Winter's been digging into why the feds raided Deripaska's properties.
Shep, good evening. Those searches taking place very much out in the open today and in the sunshine of two prominent properties in D.C. and in New York. What we don't know is what's going on in the shadows and behind the scenes with the federal investigation being led by authorities here in New York. They are not commenting tonight on who the subject of this investigation is, who might be the target, and what this whole thing is about. We do know from Deripaska's spokesperson that they say, and they're asserting, that this investigation has to do with something tied to U.S. sanctions. Deripaska has sued and tried to get off the sanctions list ever since he was put on it as a result of allegations of his involvement in 2016 Russian interference in the election, as well as his ties to Vladimir Putin, who he's believed to be quite close to. Deripaska also has ties to Paul Manafort. The two of them involved in a business venture dating back over 10 to 15 years. They've known each other for a long time, and emails that came out around the time of the Mueller investigation seem to indicate that Manafort may have actually given Deripaska private briefings on what was going on in the 2016 election. Deripaska's never been charged with a crime, has always said that he's done nothing wrong. Paul Manafort, as we know, pleaded guilty to a host of charges, but has since been pardoned. Shep.
Tom Winter, thank you. A fiery crash near Houston this morning and all 21 people on board survived. Look at this video of a twin-engine jet after it burst into flames. An official says that jet had trouble getting altitude during takeoff. It went straight off the runway, they tell us, smashed through a fence, crossed a road, then caught fire in a field. We're told everybody somehow got out of that plane safely without any serious injuries. Our NBC affiliate KPRC2 in Houston reports this was a charter flight heading for Boston for the Astros and Red Sox Game 4 tonight. Dozens of New York cops facing misconduct charges for actions during last year's Black Lives Matter protests. The Civilian Complaint Review Board is an oversight agency for the New York City Police Department. It reports it received more than 700 complaints amid violent protests across the city. So far, it completed 127 investigations that substantiated 42 of the complaints. Of those, they contained 91 allegations of misconduct against 65 officers. The board now recommends disciplinary charges for abuse of authority, use of force, making untruthful statements, and offensive language. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says training is the key to stopping this behavior.
I'm not happy to see even a single officer potentially having done the wrong thing, but it is a force of 35,000. I want to put that in perspective. And I think de-escalation training has worked. I think implicit bias training has worked, but I think we have to do more.
The Civilian Complaint Review Board recommending the highest level of discipline for 37 of those officers. If they're found guilty, they could face loss of vacation days, suspension, or firing. The NYPD's largest union denouncing the recommendations, saying officers were sent to those protests with no plan, no strategy, and no support. The University of North Carolina can keep affirmative action and consider race in its admissions process. That's from a new ruling in federal court today, or yesterday, actually, when a judge ruled that the university's use of race as a factor in admissions is constitutional and is not discriminatory. The group Students for Fair Admissions is backed by conservative legal strategists. They sued the university earlier this year. Their claim, UNC's admissions policies discriminate against white and Asian American students. The group has already said they'll appeal. In a statement, the university's vice chancellor said their admissions process contributes to a campus, quoting now, where students from all backgrounds can excel and thrive. Sharing your bank account information with the IRS. First, $600 would have raised a flag. Now, lawmakers putting a new number on the table. And the Biden administration is expected to support the change. National parks, a favorite pastime for so many. But now it's too many. So parks are getting creative to thin the herd and make sure you still get the trip you paid for.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Planning for retirement? Chances are a lot of you are considering Florida because the Sunshine State just dominated this year's list of America's best places to retire. According to U.S. News and World Report, Sarasota, Naples, and Daytona Beach took the top three spots. Several other cities in Florida making the list, including Melbourne, Tampa, Fort Myers, Port St. Lucie, and Pensacola. Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Ann Arbor, Michigan also cracked the top 10. This year, U.S. News added crime rates and air quality as factors that make up its happiness index. The metric also considers housing affordability, health care quality, and retiree taxes. Senate Democrats are now scaling back a proposal to make banks share more account information with the IRS. It's a new plan to try to crack down on wealthy people who are dodging taxes. In essence, start tracking how much money they're depositing and withdrawing from their accounts, especially at the end of the year, and then compare that to their tax filings. Every account with total annual deposits or withdrawals of $600 would face these rules. But that provision just got a ton of pushback from the banking industry and from Republicans who say it just raises significant privacy concerns. So Democrats are changing the threshold to $10,000. CNBC's Ilan Moy now. Why the change?
Well, Shep, Democrats are basically acknowledging that their original plan went too far. It is hard to make the case that you need information about bank accounts with as little as $600 in order to crack down on the rich people who aren't paying their taxes. So this new plan, as you mentioned, would raise that threshold for reporting to the IRS to $10,000 in annual transactions. And any money in the bank from your wages, Social Security, or other federal benefits aren't included, since the IRS actually already has that information. Now, two powerful Democratic senators are spearheading this change. Ron Wyden, the head of the Finance Committee, and Senator Elizabeth Warren. The White House has blessed this new approach as well. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the proposal reflects the administration's strong belief that we should zero in on those at the top of the income scale who don't pay the taxes they owe, while protecting American workers. But Republicans are still railing against this, even with the higher threshold. They point to privacy concerns, compliance costs for the banks, and the risk that this could trigger audits for those at the bottom instead of those at the top.
It's a stupid idea. that I hear from Iowans all the time, that they don't want the peering eyes of the IRS snooping on them. The middle class is going to be hurt as a result of this.
Democrats believe this proposal could raise hundreds of billions of dollars in unpaid taxes. And, Shep, they're counting on that money to pay for all those big spending plans.
Ilan, thank you. Have a long to-do list, or maybe you want to check something off your bucket list. Make sure it's a bones day. This 13-year-old pug is the newest internet sensation and predictor of your day. Wildfire season, longer and more dangerous. Firefighters spending weeks on the front lines. Now, new legislation aimed at making certain parts of life a little easier. And a Texas administrator asked teachers, hey, present opposing sides of the Holocaust. Now, for the first time, students and parents react. A community at odds as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. Move over horoscopes and tea leaves, even weather forecasts, because the internet now looks to a pug named Noodle to see what kind of a day is ahead. The pug is this 13-year-old, by some estimates, basically 100 human years. So sometimes it's hard for him to stand up, you know? But still, every day, Noodle tries, and his owner posts the results to millions and millions who follow the forecast on TikTok. Some days, it works.
Oh my gosh, oh, it's a bones day. Look at that. Steady as the beating drum.
And on those days, you celebrate and indulge. Ask for a raise. Text your crush. Go on a shopping spree.
Get that extra guac. Buy that jet ski. Buy insurance for that jet ski. Buy a place to store that jet ski. Treat yourself to dinner.
But sometimes, and I wouldn't call these rare days, Noodle turns into a mushy puddle on his doggy bed. No bones.
I've got to be honest with you. It is raining this morning. Noodle does not do the rain. And we'll see if he does bones. Nope.
No bones. Which means it's a day to take it easy. Stay in bed. Don't text your crush. Maybe don't even go to work. Your boss will understand. And today, well, today's a no bones day. So it's a wonder this newscast even made it to air. So far, catch the prediction live when Noodle appears on the Today Show around 8:30 tomorrow morning. It was a historic day for crypto on Wall Street, and that's what's stopping CNBC on the money. The first Bitcoin futures ETF making its trading debut today. The new ETF's ticker, BITO. It tracks Bitcoin futures. That means it doesn't invest directly in Bitcoin, so its performance could differ from Bitcoin's actual price, which is near a record high today. But this is a milestone for the crypto industry because it's the first time Bitcoin futures ETF that has the SEC's that the SEC has allowed on the market. Easy for me to say. The FDA moving to approve over-the-counter hearing aids. That would allow people with mild or moderate hearing loss to buy hearing aids without a medical exam or special fitting. Officials say the FDA change should increase competition and bring down those prices. And Kraft launching a mac and cheese club. Members will be able to try the latest flavors before they even hit the store shelves next year. Some of the new limited edition mixes you'll get to sample: pizza, buffalo, and ranch. Oh yeah. On Wall Street, the Dow up 199, S&P up 33, the NASDAQ up 107. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news.
Bond denied for Alec Murdoch, the disgraced lawyer from South Carolina. Why the judge says he needs to stay behind bars. Traffic jams and waiting lines for hiking trails. Americans rush to national parks like never before. What's being done to thin the crowds? But first, a tense school board meeting after an administrator's controversial remarks about the Holocaust.
Students, parents, and people from Southlake, Texas community packing into the meeting just last night. Many of them outraged over this secretly recorded audio obtained by NBC News of an administrator in Southlake, just outside Dallas.
Make sure that if you have a book on the Holocaust, that you have one that has opposing, that has other...
How do you oppose the Holocaust?
Believe me, that's come up.
Well, the administrator made the comments during a training about which books teachers can keep in their classrooms. District officials asked them to get rid of any books that present a singular viewpoint that may be considered offensive. Teachers complained the rules forced them to get rid of books focusing on racism. Last night, a former student said the district is opening the door for bullying, something he says he experienced when he was there.
The other facts are that I, a Jewish kid born in Dallas, was bullied on a daily basis for my religion for almost 2 years in this very district, nearly driving me to suicide before thankfully being removed from the environment thanks to an administrator. I still struggle with the depression that started at Dawson Middle School in 2003 to this very day.
The school superintendent later apologized for the administrator's comments, saying there are not two sides to the Holocaust, and pledging to work with the staff to clarify the policy. Mike Hixenbaugh is an NBC News national investigative reporter and co-host of the Southlake podcast. He joins us now from Texas. Mike, this all stems from a new Texas law, but even the author of that law says this isn't what the law is about. Why is there all this confusion?
Well, that's right. And this is a Texas law, like many across the country passed in conservative states this year, that aims to restrict the ways teachers can teach and talk about racism and the America's legacy of racism in classrooms. And this specific law directs teachers that if they're presenting information to students about, quote, currently controversial subjects, that they need to present students with perspectives from all sides. Now, I think you would struggle to find a lot of people who believe that, you know, the Holocaust is anything other than an atrocity, a historical fact. But I think what you hear in that audio is the administrator, when she says, you know, that present students with a book that shows both sides of the Holocaust, teachers say, what do you mean? How do you oppose the Holocaust? And she says, well, trust me, it's come up.
Yeah, I heard her say it. I'm just wondering if this example in Southlake, which you've been documenting so brilliantly, must be just like that in many cases across the state of Texas. What happens now?
Well, I think that's the trouble, is teachers and administrators are struggling to determine who decides what's currently controversial. So what you hear in this audio and in examples across the state is teachers and administrators struggling to figure out, will this book upset somebody? Will this book upset somebody? Will this lesson upset somebody? And so they're just pulling them off the shelf in many cases, or having conversations like this one.
Mike Hixenbaugh, thank you so much. The Southlake podcast, hosted by Mike and NBC's Antonia Hilton, available now. You can listen to it on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. A judge denied bond to the disgraced South Carolina lawyer Alec Murdoch. He was in court today, accused of embezzling millions of dollars in a settlement over his housekeeper's death. The judge said he denied bond because he considered Alec Murdoch could be a danger to himself and others. He also ordered Murdoch to get a psychiatric evaluation. Gloria Satterfield was that housekeeper. She died in the Murdoch's home back in February of 2018 after reportedly falling down stairs. Her sons were supposed to get millions from an insurance settlement, but they say they never got it. CNBC's Perry Russum now on Murdoch's day in court.
Prominent South Carolina attorney Alec Murdoch once again being walked in front of a judge, facing two felony counts of obtaining property by false pretenses.
This is the tip of the iceberg.
State prosecutor Creighton Waters detailing the allegations for the first time. The new charges are tied to the death of the Murdoch family's longtime housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield. She died in 2018 after falling in the Murdoch's home.
This led to a chain of events, Your Honor, that I've never seen before.
Waters says Murdoch promised to financially help Satterfield's sons with money coming from a life insurance policy. Waters says Murdoch then set up the sons with one of his close friends and an old college roommate, to represent the family's estate.
We're talking about over $3 million that was misappropriated. That's a lot of money.
It's amazing to us that the focus is on just Alec. There are other people who were participating in this process.
Murdoch's attorneys speaking in front of cameras outside of court after the judge denied bail and ordered a mental evaluation.
We're glad that the judge is concerned about his mental condition, and we think we can get him a relatively clean bill of health by the end of this week, early next week.
Gloria Satterfield's family was in the courtroom today. Police are still looking at exactly how she died. The prosecutor says Murdoch was using the money to pay off credit cards. He was writing checks to himself as well as to his father, Shep.
Perry Russum, thank you. As wildfire seasons grow longer and more intense, Congress is now taking steps to ease the financial and mental burden on federal firefighters. A Colorado congressman proposing a bill today that would raise federal firefighters' pay to at least $20 an hour. The bill also increases paid leave, plus retirement and mental health benefits. The congressman says wildfires are going to get worse, and it is up to us to take the steps now to try to mitigate the harm and the damage in the future and to compensate and protect those firefighters. More than 47,000 wildfires have burned across America so far this year. The Fire, Weather, and Avalanche Center estimates the flames have destroyed more than 6.5 million acres so far. For context, that's about 11 football fields every minute. FDR once said, "There's nothing so American as our national parks." This year, they might be a little too American. Crowded trails, traffic jams, and our favorite American pastime, trying to find parking. After months stuck indoors, seems a lot of us are exploring the great outdoors more than ever before. Take a look. In July, Yellowstone had the most visitors ever. More than 1 million people stopped by. Nearby Grand Teton in Wyoming also had its busiest July ever, more than 800,000 visitors. Same at Zion in Utah. Officials there say hikers had to wait up to 4 hours just to enter certain trails. On how our parks are keeping crowds from going wild, here's CNBC's Valerie Castro.
The beauty and splendor of our national parks were the ideal getaway from pandemic life. Turns out millions of other people had the same idea. More than 3.4 million people visited Acadia National Park in Maine in 2019. There was a drop in 2020 due to pandemic restrictions, but 2021 so far continues to break records.
When we look at the month of May, visitation was up 47%. When we look at June, that is the highest June on record.
Instead of an escape, not at all. Many found themselves fighting for a parking spot in the great outdoors. Cadillac Mountain, the highest point on the eastern seaboard in the U.S., is one of the most popular spots in Acadia to catch a dreamy sunrise. It became an early morning nightmare in recent years.
There are 170 parking spots on the summit, and it was not uncommon for 450 cars to show up for those spots. If someone happened to have an accident on top of Cadillac Summit, there was no way to get an emergency vehicle up there to help people.
This year, the park implemented a vehicle reservation system.
I thought it made coming into the park in the morning way easier and way more efficient.
But some found the process frustrating.
We had no luck until literally, I think 2 days ago, we found one and we had two cars.
I did see people getting turned away from being able to enter the park.
Other parks have adopted similar measures. Glacier National Park in Montana also requires vehicle reservations to drive its Going the Sun Road. Rocky Mountain National in Colorado implemented a timed entry system for the entire park.
You mentioned Rocky Mountain National. How bad has that been?
It's been crazy. The lines are absurd.
As the enthusiasm for the parks continues to grow, park rangers say be patient, plan ahead, and have a plan B if the sites you want to see are just too crowded.
We're really trying to hold on to these places as long as we can so that the same experience you have today is the same experience that somebody has in the future.
And as the weather turns colder and visits slow down, many parks like Acadia will put the reservation system on hold. They'll bring it back during the busy season next year, and Acadia says it's considering a second reservation-only area within the park. Arches National Park in Utah is also looking at a pilot program for reservations to begin in the spring. Shep?
Crowded, very crowded.
Very
Thank
true.
You. And speaking of, in the nation's capital today, there is chaos in the transportation system. The metro system specifically forced to pull more than half of its trains off the tracks. How a recent crash alerted authorities to a much bigger problem. A smartphone showdown. Google unleashing its newest weapon called the Pixel 6. But will it be enough to take down the iPhone? Coming up, the experts weigh in. Washington, D.C.'s metro system taking drastic steps to protect riders. It abruptly pulled more than half of its entire fleet off the tracks overnight after a single train derailed three times in one day last week. Authorities say the problem is with the system's newest set of trains, the 7000 series line. 748 cars in total and 60% of the whole. They've pinpointed the issue to a specific design flaw. They say the train's wheels are spread too wide on its axles, and that's causing it to easily slip off the tracks. Authorities say the problem could have been catastrophic. On average, 150,000 people ride metro trains every day, but safety officials warn they're now concerned about other trains in other cities.
If you're a transit agency operating in the United States and you're listening, make sure that you're checking your cars as well.
Local coverage now. NBC4 Washington talked to Metro employees who say they've known about these safety issues for years. Here's Adam Tuss.
1 week after the derailment on the Blue Line, we're starting to hear from Metro employees. Many who say they don't wish to be identified are telling News 4 they've known about issues with these 7000 series rail cars for years, but in many cases they've been afraid to tell their managers out of fear they could be retaliated against for raising concerns. A nearly 20-year veteran of Metro with this chilling statement about the serious lack of a safety culture at Metro.
They took a gamble with people's lives, and God forbid this one wasn't with Metro workers feel like could have happened. Metro workers are so in fear of another catastrophic incident like the incident they had before where the train operator actually lost her life.
She's referencing the 2009 Metro Red Line crash where nine people, including the train operator, were killed when a fast-moving train slammed into a stopped train. Meantime, as far as the investigation is concerned, a Metro source tells us that train that derailed was likely pulling a rail car whose wheels were locked and weren't even turning. That rail car was essentially being dragged down the tracks.
The final resting location of the train was about 1,800 feet south of the point of derailment.
And as this situation drags on, riders remain frustrated with the delays.
It says, oh, your train's coming in 11 minutes. And then it turned around and said, oh, the train is coming in 24 minutes. And then it was just delayed.
And here we are live on the metro system tonight. As a lot of people, yeah, they probably like to get home to dinner, but they are sitting here waiting for their train. Shep, you know, a lot of people have been asking us about these newer rail cars. After they get inspected, will they be able to come back here onto the metro tracks so that people can spread out again, so that people can catch a train in a couple of minutes? Well, right now, there is no timetable to return those 7000 series rail cars, as they're known, to the tracks. So for a lot of people, that could mean 30 to 40 minute waits. Going to be a long, long week for people here in D.C.
Sure sounds it. Adam Tuss live, Falls Church, Virginia. You know, few products have dominated the tech space like Apple's iPhone. It all began, of course, in 2007 when Steve Jobs made a seemingly far-fetched promise.
We are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
And it did. For more than a decade, iPhone has remained the smartphone. The company reports there are now more than a billion active iPhones around the globe. For years, other companies have attempted to contend with Apple, and all of it's really to limited success. Now Google thinks it may have finally created a so-called iPhone killer. This is the Pixel 6. Google unveiled it today, along with the Pixel 6 Pro. These high-end phones are the first powered by Google's own Tensor chip. The company says that chip enables unique software features like these, removing objects from the background of photos and live translation while you chat. The Pixel is set for pre-sale today, but it'll cost you. The normal version starts at $599, the Pro at $899. Todd Hazelton now, technology product editor for CNBC Digital. Todd, I hear you got early access to this Pixel 6. What do you think? iPhone killer or no?
Hi, Shep. How you doing? No, but the reason why is not that these aren't nice phones. These look very nice, and I just got them. They're very customizable. They have, as you mentioned, Google's new Tensor chip, which enables a lot of things. The reason they're not an iPhone killer just off the bat is Apple's very tricky to take customers away from. And that's because they create this ecosystem of products, the Apple Watch, AirPods, Mac, iPad, that are all what I call and what the industry says are sticky products, right? So you buy the Apple Watch and it only works with an iPhone. So why would you then replace your iPhone with a Google phone? You wouldn't do that because you've got the Apple Watch. And so that's what Google's up against. But Google's also up against its own partners. It licenses Android. It's a big moneymaker for them outside of advertising to people like or companies like Samsung. And so at the same time that it's licensing software to Samsung all over the world, helping Android run on 3 billion devices, so far more than the 1 billion iPhones, it's now competing more aggressively against Samsung. And so that's the tricky thing here with these phones, just no matter how great they are. And they do make good phones.
It's touting the software features as well. How do they compare to iPhone?
So really similar in the sense that, like, it's Android, not iOS, but you get Google's ecosystem instead of Apple's. So a lot of things that come preloaded are like YouTube and Gmail versus, you know, iMessage and things that you get on an iPhone. But what Tensor does that makes this so much different is it does a lot of machine learning in the background. That's sort of fancy talk for just computing that Google felt it couldn't do previously with Qualcomm processors. And so it could do things like translate, as you mentioned. It can remove things from photos. And the big thing is to take better pictures and better video, which is what Google's trying to do better than anybody else on the market. That's their goal. And that's where they'll be chasing Apple the most, because really what drives people to buy new phones are cameras, battery life, and screens.
You betcha. Todd Hazelton, thanks a lot. NASA's upgrade to its Hubble telescope. It was supposed to debut in 2010 and cost about $1 billion. Instead, it was 11 years late and $9 billion over budget. But Houston, we have a telescope. It's called the Webb, and scientists say what it will discover makes it worth every penny. Here on Earth, you're going to need a bigger board. Surf's up, and the sharks are out in California. The close-up encounters ahead. Move over, Hubble. There's a new telescope in town. NASA calls it the James Webb Space Telescope. They just unboxed it in French Guiana, and engineers preparing it for launch on December the 18th. Webb is the world's largest and most advanced space science observatory. And it really is a beast. The main mirror, around 21 feet, and the sun shield, about the size of a tennis court. Webb's payload mass, nearly 14,000 pounds. And the final cost, a staggering $10 billion. To transport the thing to the launch site, they had to build a special suitcase. No carry-on for this piece of luggage. It's 110 feet long, and the whole thing weighs about 84 tons. It took the 16-day trip on a truck, then a barge, and a ship to get from California to South America. But that's just the beginning of the journey. And CNBC's Morgan Brennan reports Webb's real mission is to travel back in time.
3 decades and $10 billion in the making, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope is finally ready for flight. Once in space, scientists say its powerful infrared telescope we'll be able to study the origins of the universe, going back to the first light created by the Big Bang.
It's a kind of light that our eyes can't see, but it can penetrate through dust. And it's particularly important for studying the earliest stages of the universe where it was very dusty. And we can learn a lot more about that through a space telescope that can see in the infrared.
The new spacecraft built by Northrop Grumman will succeed Hubble. It is larger and 100 times more powerful, allowing it to discern faint stars and galaxies over 13 billion light years away. Webb will travel much deeper into space, too, orbiting the sun 1 million miles from Earth. The project hasn't been without controversy, though. Multiple mishaps, budget crises, even a threatened congressional cancellation. But most recently, issues with the name itself. After claims surfaced that the Apollo-era agency administrator, James Webb, allowed for the dismissal of gay and lesbian federal employees. NASA has since said it found no evidence to support those allegations. But for the telescope, what comes next will be the toughest test yet. A fiercely precise, complicated choreography of delicate deployment.
It has this enormous sun shield that needs to fold up real small to fit inside the rocket. The mirror itself also needs to fold up to fit inside the rocket. All of that needs to unfold once the rocket has gotten clear of the Earth. And it's very complex. There's lots of parts that need to work just so. And engineers have been working on this for years and years, testing it every which way. They're very confident that it will work and that the science will be fantastic once it does.
The Webb Telescope is the latest on an ambitious deep space manifest for NASA, a manifest that also includes the recently launched Lucy mission to study Jupiter's Trojan asteroids and, of course, a return to the moon. Shep?
Morgan, thanks. A drone capturing every surfer and swimmer's worst nightmare. This video taken off the coast of Southern California, just north of San Diego. These are juvenile great white sharks lurking beneath the waves, very close to these surfers. And side note, juvenile sharks can still grow to be 9 feet long. But at least these guys have surfboard to make you feel a little better. Not the case here. Swimmers bobbing around with the sharks. And this video, straight out of a scene from Jaws. In that case, they might have needed a bigger boat, but at least they had one. The director of a shark lab in Long Beach says these young sharks are staying near the shore and away from large predators. He says they're not looking for humans, but still, maybe a little too close for comfort. 45 seconds on a race to the finish. The January 6th committee voted seconds ago, unanimously, to hold Steve Bannon in contempt for defying his subpoena. It's now up to the full House to vote and send a criminal referral to the Justice Department. Sources tell NBC News the FDA could sign off on mixing and matching booster shots as early as tomorrow. And now, you know the news of this Tuesday, October 19th, 2021. I'm Shepard Smith. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The News on CNBC. And you can listen to The News podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. For now, you should sit back and stay tuned because Shark Tank is next. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.